himself off the couch and go to stand beside him at the windows. When I glance at him, I can see the tears on his cheeks, his red eyes. Finally, after a long moment, he turns his head slightly toward me, his gaze still directed outward at the city. "Does he remember anything?" he asks in a low voice. I can hear the real question he's asking. Does he remember me? Does he remember our parents? "He knows who you are," I reply softly, "but only in the way that a stranger might know you. I'm sorry, Hideo. I wish I could tell you something better than that." Hideo continues to stare blankly out at the city. I find myself wondering what he's thinking. If maybe he wishes he could use the Neuralink to will away what happened in the past. "Jax told me that the only way to help Sasuke is if we use your algorithm to turn Zero against Taylor." This breaks through his trance. Hideo looks sidelong at me.
"You want me to link the algorithm to her?"
"Exactly. If you open the algorithm and connect Taylor to it, you'll be able to control Taylor and free Zero from her."
"What about Sasuke?"
Hideo's jaw tightens at his brother's name. "Taylor has archives of Sasuke's past mind, all the iterations of him. If we can combine those versions with who he is now, we can make his mind whole again." I pause. "I know he can never be real, but you'll be able to have him back in some sense. You're asking me to give you access to my algorithm." I hesitate. "Yes." He's still struggling to trust me, but with his guard down, I can once again see his beating heart behind the armor. All the thousands of possibilities of what could have happened to Sasuke are wiped from his gaze and replaced by clarity. A path forward. He has a chance to talk to his brother again. Bring him back in some small way. For this, I know he's willing to tear the world's order to shreds. He's willing to risk anything. Hideo looks back out at the water. A long beat passes before he finally says, "I'll do it." Without thinking, I take a step closer to him until we're nearly touching. My hand comes up to rest on his arm. I don't say anything. He stirs anyway, sensing my own mix of emotions, the wavering trust I'm putting in him, the pull I always feel when I'm near him, my fear of letting him in again. Beneath his shirt, his skin is warm. I can't bring myself to move away. He turns to face me. "You're risking your life telling me this," he says. "You could have returned to New York and left all of this behind. But you're still here, Amika." For a moment, I imagine myself back at the little bar with Hammy and the other riders. I see Hammy leaning forward and fixing me with her steady gaze. "Why are you doing this?" Then I do something I never thought I would. I think back on the morning I'd crouched, thin and hollow and hopeless, in my foster home bed, and heard his story on the radio. I let the memory form, crystallizing into a clear image. And then I send it to him. Every last thing I saw and felt and heard that day. I let him see the broken side of me that had stirred at the knowledge of him. The pieces that somehow found each other again. I don't know how much of it he can see and understand. It's a jumble of thoughts and emotions, not a real recorded memory. Suddenly, I'm afraid that he won't get what I'm trying to say at all. That this vulnerable, naked moment might mean nothing to him. I turn away in embarrassment, but when I glance back at him, his eyes are locked on me,
taking me in as if I am all that matters, as if he understands everything I tried to share. It's almost more than I can bear. I swallow hard and force myself to look away. My cheeks burn hot. Hideo, I'm never going to agree with what you're doing. I'll never feel right about the deaths connected to your algorithm or your reasons justifying them. But that day, when you were just a boy being interviewed on the radio, hiding your broken heart, you reached a girl searching for something to hold on to. She found you, and you helped her pull herself up. Hideo stares at me, his gaze searing me to my core. I didn't know, he whispered. You are forever a piece of my story. I couldn't turn my back on you without turning my back on myself. I had to try. My quiet words hang in the air. I had to hold out my hand to you. He's so close now. I'm on dangerous ground. I never should have come here. But I stay still and don't move away. You're afraid, I murmur, noticing the emotions pulsing from him. I'm terrified, he whispers back, of what you're capable of. Because you're here, walking on a razor-thin line. I've been afraid ever since I met you, when you looked me straight in the eye and broke down my system in a matter of minutes. I spent hours afterwards studying what you did. I remember everything you've ever said to me. An ache enters his voice. I'm afraid that every time I see you might be the last. I think back to the piercing gaze he'd given me during our last meeting. Underneath that had been fear all along. You told me you never wanted to see me again, I managed to say. His voice is low and raw. Because every time I see you, it takes everything in me to turn away. I realize that I'm leaning toward him now, yearning for something more. He must be able to sense it through our connection, and as if in answer, I feel the need coming from him. Shadows of what he wishes he could do. Fleeting thoughts of his hand at my waist, pulling me in. The space between us feels alive, sparking with a searing desire to close. He hesitates, with his heart exposed and vulnerable. I can now see the fear in his expression. What do you want, Amika? He whispers. I close my eyes, take a breath, and open them again. I want to stay. It is the last trembling rope holding him back. He closes the inches between us, takes my face in his hands, and leans down toward me. His lips touch mine. Any sense of control I'd felt now shatters. He's warm, his body familiar, and I fall into him. There is none of the gentle hesitation of our first kiss. This is deeper, more intense. Both of us are making up for lost time. My arms wrap around his neck. His hand pushes against the small of my back, pressing my body to his. My fingers run through his hair. He breaks our kiss, only to touch his lips to my neck, and I exhale, shuddering at his warm breath against my skin. Glimpses and fantasies and sensations spark from his mind to mine to his, leaving me tingling down to my toes. I vaguely register him lifting me effortlessly into his arms. He's carrying me toward the bed. Don't do this, I warn myself. You're on thin ice. You need to keep a clear head. But when we fall against the bed sheets, all I focus on is the cut of his jaw in the shadows. I admire the slant of deep blue light against his skin, as I fumble with the buttons of his shirt and tug his belt loose. His hands are yanking my shirt up over my head, sliding along my skin. The cool air in the room hits my bare chest, and I'm struck with a sudden instinct to cover myself in front of him. But he stares down at me, his eyes dark with desire. A shy smile touches his lips. The city's glow outside catches on his long lashes. When I reach for him, he kisses me on the cheek, then trails his lips along my neck and my collar. His breathing is heavy and uneven, his hands warm and gentle. I tremble against him, and after a heartbeat, I realize that he is shaking too. I run a finger along the muscles of his chest down to his stomach, blushing at the way this simple touch makes him shiver. His mouth brushes against mine, asking me in a whisper what I want, and I tell him, and he gives it to me. And in this moment, I don't think about anything else, not the black coats, not Zero, not the dangers waiting for us. I just think about now. Just my body entwined with his. Just his sharp intake of breath, my name feverish on his lips, the cool sheets beneath us, the heat of him moving against me, my fingers clinging desperately to his back. Just me. Him. And the gentle lapping of the ocean outside, ink under a midnight sky, separating us from the glittering city that awaits us. Chapter 23. 1 day until the Warcross closing ceremony. I don't stir until the first rays of dawn enter the room, casting a weak pallet of light against the tangled sheets. For a moment, I can't remember where I am. An unfamiliar room in an unfamiliar bed. The space next to me is empty. The room is rocking ever so slightly. A boat? Slowly, the memories from the night before come back to me. I frown, gathering the blankets around my chest and pulling myself up into a sitting position. Did Hideo leave? I look around the room until my eyes finally settle on a sliding glass door left ajar, beyond which the silhouette of a man stands bathed in gold, leaning against the ship's railing and looking out at the city. I let myself watch him for a moment. Then I reach for my clothes, pull them on, and slip out of his bed. The air outside is still cool, smelling of salt and sea, and my skin prickles as I stop to lean against the open door. 2 steaming mugs sit on a small table beside where Hideo's standing. Morning dew lingers on the door's glass. I run an idle finger along it, noting the feel of the moisture, and remind myself that I'm in the real world now, not a virtual one. Hideo looks to his side so that I can see the profile of his face. "You're up early," he says. "You knew I'd be," I reply, nodding at the 2 mugs of coffee. "Or you wouldn't have poured me that." He glances briefly at me, a small smile on his lips, and takes a sip of his own coffee. He looks pale this morning, dark circles still under his eyes, but other than that, I wouldn't be able to tell what he's going through. Every vulnerability that he had exposed to me the night before has been neatly stored away again, and for a moment, I'm afraid he's gone back to not trusting me again, thinking this was all a huge mistake. Then I meet his gaze, and in it, I see something open. No, he hasn't retreated entirely. The real Hideo I've been searching for is here. When I still linger by the door, he nods for me to come join him, handing me my mug of coffee as I reach him. "Taylor expects you here," he says quietly, his eyes going out to the stirring city. I nod. My mind returns briefly to Zero. They might be watching us right now from some unknown place on shore. "They want me close to you," I reply, as I put my mug back down on the table. Hideo's eyes flicker, and I know he's thinking about his brother. Whatever it is, though, he doesn't say it out loud. Instead, he reaches for me and pulls me to him. His hands are warm from the coffee mug. I suck in my breath as he turns me around so that my back is against the balcony, and his arms are pressed against the ledge on either side of me, pinning me in. "This is what they expect to see, isn't it?" he murmurs, his face tilted toward my ear. "Yes." My skin tingles at his closeness, and all I can think of is what happened last night. He's right, of course. And if the Black Coats are watching, it'll help my case for them to see me with Hideo. Again, I find myself thinking of my dream of shattered glass, where Zero was watching us from the other side of the bedroom. It's enough to make me glance to my side, half expecting him to be here on the yacht. But it's just us. Hideo gives me a half smile, leans close, and presses his lips against my neck. "Kiss me then," he murmurs, and pulls me toward him. I close my eyes at his touch, shivering, and turn my face toward his. I kiss him slowly, savoring the moment. If only things could stay this simple between us. Finally, I force myself to push away. "We won't have much time to act during the closing ceremony tomorrow," I murmur to him. "We'll need to do it right as your beta lenses update." He watches me carefully from the corner of his eye. The fire in his gaze is dark, a seething hate. "Good," he says. There is a note in his voice that unsettles me. "I'll be ready for Taylor. I want to see her face." The memory of the lines of the guilt-ridden outside the police stations come back to me. All those suicides by criminals compelled by the algorithm. The suicides of some who weren't criminals at all. "And what happens if we succeed?"
"What do you mean?"
"If you get your brother back, even an echo of him, what then? What happens to the algorithm? Will you keep it going?" He's silent. Everything he's ever done has been to find the person responsible for taking his brother from him, and to prevent the same thing from ever happening again to anyone else. Now he knows who did it. He'll be confronting her in a day. "You always said that the algorithm is meant to be unbiased," I say. "But that's never going to be true, is it? Not when it's controlled by a human." I uncovered everything I could about Sasuke because I cared about what had happened to him. Because I care about you. But the bigger reason I did it was to give you a reason to stop using your algorithm. I don't add that I've overheard what he'd said to Mari and Ken, or that I know he's been using the algorithm to try to hunt down Sasuke's kidnapper. But I don't need to. Hideo knows what I'm talking about. "Please, Hideo," I add softly to him. "This is your chance to do what's right. End the algorithm." For the first time since he told me about his plans, I can see him wrestling with the choices he's made. But he doesn't reply. He straightens and moves to stand at my side, where he rests his elbows against the railing. Out across the ocean, Tokyo's skyline is rimmed in light. I do the same, turn myself toward the city and study the day as it grows brighter. Hideo doesn't answer me, not directly, but his eyes are heavy. He looks away from the light and toward the shadows that still stretch across the docks, casting the streets in blue and gray. What will I do if we succeed and Hideo continues ahead with the algorithm? What if I've been wrong about him all along? The thought stirs in me, dark and troubling. In my files, I quietly bring up the cube that Zero had given me. It rotates before me in midair, invisible to Hideo. If Hideo doesn't change his mind, I know what I need to do. And this time,
there will be no forgiving. No second chances. If he won't give up the algorithm willingly, then I'll have to take it from him.
Chapter 24. The Day of the Warcross Closing Ceremony. Late afternoon on the day of the closing ceremony is muted with clouds. Even though I have my lenses on, I know that underneath the bright hues of the official teams coloring the sky, Tokyo is covered in shades of gray, turning steadily darker. How appropriate. The timer in my vision tells me that I have 1 hour until the beta lenses patch. A black auto car picks me up at my hotel in Omotesando, and once I'm inside, it steers itself in the direction of the Tokyo Dome. Outside my window, the city's celebrations have taken on the heat of a fever, and everyone is cheering at our line of black cars cutting through the city. As if today were another typical Warcross tournament day. I turn away from their eager faces and stare down at my hands in my lap. What will this city be like after everything goes down? A message from Zero cuts through my thoughts.
When the closing ceremony starts, you'll be in the center of the arena with the other all-star players. Hideo will greet each of you in turn.
Zero has the inside workings of the tournament today down to every fine detail. I imagine his virtual self hacking into the Henka games schedules and downloading everything. Then, I picture Sasuke, the real Zero, curled in a ball in a corner of that mind. If he's there at all. And even if he is, how much of all this is he aware of? Would he know what's about to happen? I send a reply. When will I see you and Taylor?
When Hideo finishes greeting you, the new Warcross world for the closing ceremony will open. Hideo will personally announce it to the audience. For a moment, you, the other players, and Hideo will all be inside this world at the same time. That's the moment right before the beta lenses get patched, and the moment you will be able to hack into his mind.
Zero pauses.
Be prepared. We'll see you on the floor of the arena.
I will. Our conversation ends. I bring up the cube in my hand again, letting Zero's hack hover in my palms. I know Hideo will seize the chance to trap Taylor in the algorithm, hopefully freeing his brother. But the algorithm itself. I think back to the image of Hideo's uncertain face as he stood with me on the deck of his yacht. I break open the cube to stare at the code, letting the glowing blue rows of text fill the interior of the car, and then close it back up again. I have to believe that he'll do what he knows is right. End it. But if he doesn't, I'll be ready for him. I take a deep breath. Then I reach out to Hideo, asking him to link with me. For a while, I stare at the glowing green halo around his profile, suddenly wondering if he's changed his mind. Then, a pleasant ding sounds. I feel the familiar trickle of his emotions into my mind. He's tense and uneasy. But most of all, he feels ready, surrounded in a dark, sure aura. Neither of us says a word. I close my eyes at his presence, letting myself stay immersed a while longer in nothing but this glimmer of his feelings and thoughts. Then, we reach the grounds of the Tokyo Dome, and I open my eyes to the roar of crowds gathered outside the stadium. 30 minutes until the beta lenses patch. Giant projections of today's players broadcast against building walls and holograms of our championship highlights looming along the stadium's perimeters. As the sight of my own footage comes into view, I hear the broadcast paired with it. In the move to allow controversial wildcard Amika Chen, originally of the Phoenix Riders, to play in the closing ceremony following her dismissal from the team. Chen, this year's number one draft pick, had so many write-in votes that, for a brief moment,
I feel that thrill again of being escorted to the dome for another game of Warcross, of standing with teammates and fidgeting, eager to be the ones to win. Now, I'm heading back into the arena for a different reason altogether. Soon, I join other black cars carrying official players until there is a caravan of us heading in the same direction. I find myself clenching and unclenching my fists in rapid succession. Stripes of all the team's colors adorn the sides of the dome today, and suspended overhead is an enormous Warcross logo in silver chrome, rotating slowly. I step out of the car in a daze and follow the bodyguards that are already waiting for me on the red carpet, leading into the stadium. People crowd along either side, dressed up like their favorite players and waving their banners and posters. They let out a deafening cheer when they catch sight of me. All I can do is look back at them and smile desperately, unable to tell them any of what's really happening. Behind and ahead of me, I recognize a few of my fellow top 10 players who will play today. They're all here. More cheers shake the ground as each of them make their way past the throngs. Then, we're inside the dome, and I'm shrouded in the arena's darkness, illuminated only by a path of colored light leading out into the center of the stadium. The booming voice of analysts along the top floors echoes around the space.
"And here come another wave of players, folks. We've spotted Team Andromeda. Captain Shahira Bulos leading her players in, Ivo Erickson, Pen Wachowski, followed by the Demon Brigade's Jenna McNeil and her crew."
Their words are nearly drowned out by the audience. As I reach the edge of the arena, the Phoenix Riders come into view. Hammy and Roshan are already here, waiting with the other players of today's match. Asher's out in the audience with the players who weren't chosen, or who'd already been chosen last year. Out of all the players, my teammates look the most tense. They know what's going to happen. The sight of them tugs at my heart, and I find myself unconsciously turning toward them. Roshan sees me first, nudges Hammy, and waves to me. Overhead, the analysts say my name, while images play around the arena of footage from when I was still an official player. Even in a stadium full of people, I feel vulnerable. The last time I was exposed in public like this, I'd almost died. My gaze sweeps the audience, searching in vain for Taylor and expecting to glimpse Zero in the shadows of the arena's halls. The back of my neck prickles as it once did on the rain-swept streets of Shinjuku. He could be anywhere. Everywhere. And even though I can't see him, I know he's watching me. Still, I keep my smile plastered on, knowing that I'm currently being projected for everyone to see. Jax. If Zero is here, then that means she probably is too, looking out for me. The thought of her gives me some small comfort, and for a second, my smile is genuine. 15 minutes until the Beta Lenses patch. As the last of the players file into the arena's center, the sweeping lights dim, and the overheads brighten. Everyone in the stadium disappears behind the glow that surrounds us. I stare out into the darkness as a voice starts to introduce each of us.
"Ladies and gentlemen, we've finally arrived at the end of this year's unexpected and truly epic Warcross Championships."
The audience bursts into an excited roar that drowns out the announcer. She pauses, then lists each of us, followed by what position we play in our teams and what we'll be playing tonight. As she finishes, a 3D view of today's environment hovers over our heads, rotating slowly for the benefit of the audience. The other players and I see a smaller version of it in front of us. It's a setting in outer space, with a planet's enormous rings slanted behind a series of small fighter pods.
"And of course," the announcer continues, "behind the game itself is the one responsible for this entire revolution, Hideo Tanaka."
As the stadium explodes into wild cheers and spotlights blaze on a passageway, I see him. Hideo, his head held high and hands in his pockets, walking toward us with his mob of bodyguards on either side. Audience members sitting in the seats near his path craned their necks and bodies forward in an unconscious attempt to be closer to him. In spite of everything, Hideo seems as poised as ever, his trained, polite smile on. As he raises a hand to wave once at the crowds, they scream their approval back at him. He appears to have his attention fixated on the audience, but through the emotions coming from him in the link, I can sense his focus on me, searing me even as he pretends not to notice. I stand still, careful to copy the other players, and keep my gaze turned up the dome. I can hear the rhythmic roar of my heartbeat in my ears. I find myself marveling for the 100th time that he's able to control his emotions even after everything I've told him. Maybe it means he'll be the same way when he's forced to confront Taylor, or even when he sees Zero for himself, reacting with stone-cold calm. Hideo greets each of the players in turn, giving his customary thanks to us for the championship season. The stadium has reached a fever pitch now, and all eyes are on him, drinking in his every move. He edges closer to me. My palms are sweating, and I wipe them against my thighs repeatedly. 10 minutes until the beta lenses patch. Hideo greets my other teammates. He shakes Roshan's hand, congratulates Hammy. And then, he's here in front of me. Gives me a tense smile, and holds his hand out to me. The audience is losing their minds. I reach out my hand to shake his, and as I do, I grip it hard for a moment longer than I should. His eyes hold mine. Through his link comes his voice, deep and strong. "We're still on the same page," he says. "It's a question." I don't blink or look away. "I am if you are." Our hands stay joined for a beat more, until we know that any longer will stir murmurs. Finally, he pulls away, and so do I. My breath rushes out of me. He walks to the center of our ring of players, then turns his face up to address the audience. The lights start to sweep again across the rows of seats. As he starts to thank the crowd for their enthusiasm, I turn my attention to the rest of the stadium. High up, near the dome ceiling, the countdown clock for the beginning of the game ticks. 5 minutes until the beta lenses patch. Everything around me feels surreal. Maybe nothing will happen. The closing ceremony seems to be progressing like it normally would. Hideo greeting the players, him addressing the audience, the people cheering for the game to start. In some alternate universe, they'll watch the match without incident. They'll file out of the arena and head back home, hop into their flights or their trains or their cars, and everything will be fine.
"To let the match begin!"
Hideo's final words jolt me back into the present. The game world loads all around us then, and we are enveloped in the sweeping blackness of space, the infinite sky dotted with stars. Giant planetary rings arc across my view in a gradient of silver. For this one moment, I dare to think that we might actually start playing this final match. Maybe none of the events of the past few weeks have ever happened. But as I finish this thought, the game world flickers. It goes out, returning us to the dome. Just in time for me to see Zero step onto the floor of the arena. And he's not alone. Chapter 25. He and Jax are flanking Taylor. They take a few steps to the middle of the arena, then stop right in front of where Hideo stands near me. One of Hideo's bodyguards makes a move toward them, but Hideo shakes his head once. "Stop." His bodyguards freeze where they are, their eyes blinking but blank, as if in a trance. But they're not the only ones. All around us, everything halts. The analysts hush in mid-sentence, the audience ceases waving their arms, the cheers quiet. Most of the other players, anyone not on the beta lenses, stop moving. Only Hammy and Roshan stay unaffected. Still, they gape at Zero, Hammy's lips slightly parted, Roshan looking like he's about to lunge forward to protect me. Where just moments earlier the noise in here was deafening, the stadium instantly plunges into eerie silence. It's as if someone had simply pressed a button and paused the world, leaving only a few of us still running. That's exactly what just happened. Hideo is using the algorithm to control everyone in here. I start to shake. I haven't seen the sheer power of his abilities with my own eyes until now. "Hideo," I say, reaching out through our link, but he doesn't respond. His attention is focused on Taylor. Taylor stares at Hideo with a soft smile I've come to know all too well. When I look at her eyes, though, they are hard as stone. "I've been watching your career for a while," she finally says to him. "You're very impressive, as is this algorithm you've developed." Hideo has gone so still that for an instant, I think he's being controlled, too. He says nothing as he stares at the woman who kidnapped his brother and stole his life. But his emotions, the dark, seething hatred churning across our link, is a flood of barbs and thorns, a force so powerful that I can almost feel the edges of it clawing into my skin. "Your creative director agreed to give us the way in," she says, "among other details." "Ken." I gasp through the overwhelming wave of Hideo's emotions. My eyes dart up to meet Taylor's. Ken had let them into the dome. What else has he given them? Hideo's eyes are hard and glittering. "How long?" he says quietly.
"Months."
Taylor takes a step forward and folds her arms.
"It's hard to find friends you can trust, isn't it? I suppose everyone has their price."
"Everyone has their price." I realize they are the exact words Zero had once said to me when he'd confronted me during the Warcross Championships.
Months.
So Ken has been working with her since before the championships began. The argument I'd seen between Ken and Hideo comes back to me in a flash. How eager he'd been to skip Mari's study on the Neuralink's flaws. But maybe his frustrations ran deeper than that. Deep enough for him to betray Hideo and let Taylor in. And suddenly, I understand how Zero always seemed to know so much. Every detail of the closing ceremony, every piece of Hideo's plan to patch the beta lenses at the opening of today's game. The bug that allows a way into Hideo's mind. The existence of the algorithm in the first place. Ken had been the one feeding them information. Maybe this is why he used to ask me to watch out for Hideo's safety. It was never actually out of concern. It was to keep tabs on Hideo. The truth of it hits me hard, so hard I can barely breathe. My gaze flies from Taylor up to the glass box overlooking the arena where Ken now sits. His silhouette is angled down toward us. Maybe he had even been the one who'd let Jax slip into Hideo's secured box in the stadium during the failed assassination attempt. My breaths are coming in short gasps now. Had Taylor offered him a stake in this mission in exchange for his help? She must have. And he, frustrated and ambitious, had agreed. 59 seconds until the beta lenses patch. Hideo's attention is no longer on Taylor. He's staring at Zero, whose eyes, unmistakably that of Hideo's brother, stay cold and unfeeling. Hideo's studying Zero as if everything I'd told him couldn't possibly be real.
"Sasuke,"
Hideo says hoarsely, the wave of his anger shifts into grief.
All semblance of practicality has vanished from him. There's a note of wild hope in his voice, like Zero might snap out of it if they could just talk to each other. And for a moment, even knowing that it's impossible, I think it might work. But Zero doesn't react in any way. Watching him in front of his brother for the first time in years, I can't tell if he registers any emotion at all. Beside him, Jax's hand is wrapped tightly around the handle of her gun. We are standing in the middle of a powder keg, and the fuse is about to blow. 30 seconds until the Beta Lens's patch. This is the deal, isn't it, Tadeo? Zero finally says. His voice sounds like it always does, and there's not even the slightest hint of recognition in it. Or has Amika not told you what she should? Hideo looks at me. His eyes are black with anguish, filled with a deep feeling of loss. The realization that everything I told him was true. That Sasuke is looking at him, saying his name, but not reacting to what it means. When he speaks again, his voice grates, harsh with desperation. You're not a work of code, he says. You're my brother. I know you're reluctant to hurt us. I can hear in your voice the memory of who you are. You know, don't you? Of course I know, Zero replies in that eerily calm way of his. The words hit Hideo like bullets. Taylor just smiles at him in that knowing, manipulative way. Look at it this way, Hideo. You created your life's work because of your brother's disappearance, she says. Everything happens for a reason. That's the most bullshit saying in the world, he snaps. Come on, now your brother is here, when I could have just let him die of his illness. Is this not better? Hideo narrows his eyes at her, the pure hatred in his gaze, the rage that has surfaced at the sight of what Taylor did to his brother. That Taylor is now threatening my life, is boiling over now. The deep, soulless fury I've witnessed in him before, the scarred knuckles. It's nothing compared to this. Taylor glances at me. She's expecting me to follow through on my promise now that I will break into Hideo's mind. 0 seconds. An electric current rushes through my head. Nearby, Hammy and Roshan also flinch. The Beta Lenses start to patch, steadily downloading the algorithm onto them. I pull out the cube that Zero had given me, the hack, and in the space of that moment, I hesitate. I don't know what gives me away to Taylor, something about the light in my eyes, the shift in my stance, the slight hesitation in my actions. Does she know I have other plans? She suddenly raises a gun and aims it directly at my head. She keeps her eyes on Hideo as her finger hovers over the trigger. Open the algorithm, Hideo, she says calmly. Hideo's lips curl into a snarl at her threat to me. His hatred pours over like oil across the ocean. At the same time, Jax, who had been so still, suddenly draws her own gun and points it directly at Taylor. Shoot her, and I shoot you. Her hand is clenched tightly enough around her gun's handle to wash her skin white. Taylor looks sharply at her. This time, the woman is surprised. What's this? She murmurs. You're in on this too, Jackson? Jax winces at the use of her full name. Taylor tightens her lips. Deep anger flashes across her face. I remember what Jax had said to me about Taylor's greatest fear. Death. Now, her daughter is threatening her with it. Panic floods Jax's eyes, that terror she'd had as a small girl cowering under the influence of someone supposed to be her mother. Her hand trembles, but this time, she doesn't back down. Everything building up inside her since the death of Sasuke has erupted to the surface, and its strength keeps her arm lifted. She tears her eyes away from Taylor long enough to glance at me. Now, she hisses. Hideo, I gasp through our link.
Taylor looks back at him and tightens her finger on her gun's trigger.
Hideo moves.
He snaps his fingers once, pulling up his own small rotating box to hover between us. Before I even have time to register that this is the key to opening his algorithm, he flicks his wrist and unlocks it. A maze of colors bursts from the box, a million bright nodes connected to each other with lines of light, the way a brain's circuits link to one another. It's massive and intricate, extending far beyond our space on the floor to fill the entire arena. For one brief instant, I am looking into a web of commands that can control the minds of every single person in the world hooked up to the Neuralink. If time could have stopped right now, I would stop to marvel at this frightening masterpiece.
Hideo homes in on Taylor's account, seizes it, and links it to the algorithm. Her mind's palette suddenly appears as a new node in the matrix, connected to Zero by a glowing thread.
Hideo flicks his wrist again. The thread snaps. Taylor shudders violently as he rips away her control of Zero.
Now, Hideo, I cry out silently. The cube in my hand flickers in and out as I tremble. Destroy the algorithm!
But Hideo's eyes are still black with hate, and I realize, abruptly, that he isn't done yet. He's not satisfied with this part of our plan, to merely hook Taylor into the algorithm and force her to free Zero from her control. He snapped loose from his measured self and allowed his rage to run free. He's going to unleash the full, unthinking force of his power on her.
No, I start to say, but it's too late. In that same instant, Taylor's lips part in terror as she realizes what he's about to do. She holds out a hand instinctively in front of her.
Hideo narrows his eyes. Through our link, I hear him send a quiet, unspoken command to Taylor. Die. Chapter 26. I see it happen in slow motion. Taylor doesn't even have the time to utter a sound. She only gets a fraction of a second, and all she can do is turn her disbelieving expression to Hideo. Her eyes dilated like a deer's at the end of the hunt, right after the predator's teeth sink in. Her lips part, but she never gets a chance to say a final word. Maybe she'd wanted to scream. Then her face goes milk white. Her eyes roll back. Her legs give way like their bones have been crushed within her flesh. She collapses hard on the floor, her head cracking with a horrifying sound. She lies there in a sickening, wrong way, and I'm reminded of the way I'd seen Tremaine fall to the ground, the spray of blood against the wall. At the same time, the node that was her mind's palette flashes a brilliant, blinding white, then vanishes, deleted from the rest of the algorithm. The links to it snap back into place with other nodes, as if Taylor's mind were never there. The command had instantly forced her brain to shut itself down. She's dead. My mind is a blank slate, with only a single thought coming in through my shock. Hideo killed her with a single command. This is supposed to be the one thing that the algorithm was designed to protect against. It was supposed to cure humanity of impulsive violence, of inflicting pain and suffering on anyone else. Yet in this single moment, in his rage for everything she had done to his brother, everything she threatened to do to me, Hideo disproved everything he worked for. Jax looks stunned. But Zero? Zero turns to face Hideo. There is nothing on his face except for an icy smile. He isn't shocked at all. He nods his head like everything just went according to his plans. He lifts a hand, waves it once, and brings up a bit of code I've never seen before. This is not the virus he had shown me. Before Hideo can react, Zero installs it into the algorithm. The web of nodes around us shakes, and then, right before my eyes, the colors change. The millions of nodes of blues and reds and greens shifting one by one into black. It sweeps across them in a tidal wave. It reaches Hideo and in an instant severs his control of the algorithm. Zero's helmet folds back up, shielding his face from view once again. Then, the algorithm shifts into place with him. I realize what has happened before anyone can say it. Zero had no plans to destroy the algorithm. He has instead merged with it. I watch in horror as the new algorithm solidifies with Zero at the center of it. His artificial mind had managed to evolve, to circumvent Taylor's control, and he had been developing it independently all along behind her back. Hideo tries to wrestle his control back, but it's too late. He has been cut entirely from his creation. One look at Jax's face tells me that Zero's plan had never been the same as Taylor's. He had never intended for her to take control of the algorithm, or even to potentially destroy it. And his goal had never been to stop only Hideo from using the Neuralink to control people. He had done this solely to take control of the Neuralink and the algorithm. He knew. He'd guessed that if Hideo saw Taylor, he would kill her himself. It's the whole reason why he let me reconnect with Hideo in the first place. Why he concocted this plan for me to cozy up to Hideo and persuade him to show me his algorithm. It's probably why no one ever caught me doing what I was doing, because Zero knew and wanted me to go through with all my plans. And that means, I realize, that Zero had always wanted Taylor dead. She had tortured his mind so severely that she had molded him into the same monster she became. In one move, Zero has gotten rid of the person who took his life, has forced Hideo to show the folly of his algorithm, and has taken control. In one move, he has gained the most powerful instrument in the world. My shock is reflected in the faces of Hideo and Jax. What have we done? The cube. The virus I have. This is still the only moment when I have a chance to break into Zero's mind. I could hack him. I lunge forward, aiming to sink the cube into his account. It flashes a blinding blue-white. But I'm too late. Zero turns to look at me. "Thank you, Amika," he says. I don't know what happens next, because everything goes black. Chapter 27. Sounds and sensations around me flicker in and out. Jax shouting at me. A din of voices I don't recognize. And then the feeling of floating in mid-air. Maybe the shock is too much. Maybe Zero had uttered a command that killed me, and I just don't know that I'm dead. My dreams, they must be dreams because they make no sense, are sharp and strange, switching abruptly from one scene to the next. There's a small boy wearing a blue scarf, and I'm chasing after him, trying in vain to tell him to turn around. I'm a child again, holding Dad's hand as we walk together through Central Park. Today he looks sophisticated, his hair smoothed into a slick shine, and his jeans and black shirt switched out for a well-tailored blazer and trousers. We've gotten out of an afternoon concert at Carnegie Hall, and he's in a bright mood, singing an off-key rendition of the concert piece as I twirl in a tulle dress. I want to lean into the familiarity of it, the loudness and the sheer joy. He points out something in the distance, and I rise up on my toes to look at what it might be. There's a dark spot in front of us, right on the park's path, like a paint streak, When I stare at it longer, it starts to grow, expanding until it soaks the path and covers everything around us. Dad pauses, afraid, his hand gripping mine tighter. When I look around me, the park is gone, and in its place is the dark world. The towering nonsense skyscrapers reaching up into a black sky. The crooked dark streets and the neon red lights of exposed names hovering over us.
Wake up, Amika Chen.
An amused voice tugs me gradually out of the darkness. When everything comes back into view, I'm in a dimly lit room with a white ceiling and floor. Tall glass window panes line every wall. This is the room where I saw Jax shoot Tremaine. We're back at the Innovation Institute. Only now, I'm on the other side of the glass. It takes me a moment to realize that I'm strapped down tightly to a chair. And another moment to notice the figure standing several feet away from me. Of course the voice had belonged to Zero. He's shielded behind his armor, and when he glances casually over his shoulder at me, I see that his face is masked behind virtual steel and glass. His hands are tucked easily behind his back, his chin tilted in thoughtful curiosity. It's such a Hideo-like gesture. A note of fear cuts through my foggy mind. Hideo, where is he? Is he here? Is he okay? What happened? I say. My words still sound a little out of place, slower than my thoughts are coming to me.
Stay still, Zero says, his voice echoing in the space.
Nearby, a girl with short silver-white hair has her back turned to me as she pulls containers of lenses off a shelf and places them on a counter. Jax. The name floats up to the surface of my groggy mind. Jax, who had been working with me. I watch her, wanting to scream. What if she has been in on it all along? Has played me for a fool? Hadn't she shot Tremaine without a second thought? What made me think that she could possibly be trustworthy? She turns around now, so that I can see her face, and takes a box of lenses to the sink. There's something off about the way she glides from one activity to the next, as if she were on autopilot rather than conscious. Zero must be controlling her, using the palette of his mind to move Jax, the girl he'd once loved, the one he'd given up his freedom to protect, around like a puppeteer would his marionette. An icy claw grips my heart. That means Zero must now be in control of everyone in the world who'd been using Hideo's lenses. Anyone who Hideo had originally connected to his algorithm. Jax, I try to say, but my voice chokes, dry from hoarseness. Had I been screaming?
I wiped your Neuralink account clean and rebooted your connection.
Zero calls back to me as he walks toward the other side of the room.
It's updating, and it will go more smoothly for you if you let yourself relax. This isn't something you'd want to glitch, Amika.
Central Park. My father. The boy with the blue scarf. What I thought were dreams were probably just a mashup of all of my memories and saved recordings, jumbled into a fray as they were deleted from my account. And what I thought was passing me out, the darkness that had engulfed me, was actually Zero powering off my Neuralink so that all I could see in my view was a black field. Everything I had, my level, my Warcross account, everything in it, is all gone. Downloaded into some external place I can't access.
This isn't something you'd want to glitch, Amika.
What do you mean? I finally croak out through my disorientation. What kind of glitch? What are you doing to me?
I'm not going to hurt you, he replies. your lenses and your connection to me are just not as stable as I'd expect, given how much control I have over everyone else. I think you may have broken something when you launched the